This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Hi, everyone. This is New Beginnings. I am Freddie Bell. Glad you're with us today. And coming up on the show, many of our favorite partners, including Leibel Sternbach is here, Joe McKenzie, and friends from AARP Minnesota. All this plus the words to the wise on New Beginnings. And our program is underway right now. Joining us is Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey and Police Chief Brian O'Hara. The Justice Department accused Minneapolis Police Friday of engaging in a pattern of violating constitutional rights and discriminating against Black and Native American people following an investigation prompted by the killing of George Floyd. The sweeping two-year civil rights investigation concluded that systemic problems in the Minneapolis Police Department made what happened to George Floyd possible. The investigation found that Minneapolis officers used excessive force. Mayor Frey, can you outline what the investigation shows?
The impetus for the investigation was the murder of George Floyd 3 years ago. While that was the impetus, this did not have one exclusive causal connection. And what I mean by that is we aren't just talking about the murder of George Floyd by Derek Chauvin. We are talking about a necessary culture shift that is long overdue, that has needed to be in place for years and generations. Over the following 3 years, the DOJ, the Department of Justice, announced that they would be conducting a patterns and practice investigation into the Minneapolis Police Department. And they, from the very beginning, had our full cooperation. The people at the DOJ are experts. They're some of the top lawyers. They did a deep investigation that was thorough, that was thoughtful, and that tackled the specificity of the issues that we need to be focusing on now. And they delivered the conclusions of their pattern and practice investigation this morning. The primary four areas that they were focusing on were use of force, discrimination, ADA, or Americans with Disabilities Act violations, and the fourth one is First Amendment. So those are the four general areas, and certainly there is a lot of information in each one of those. And, you know, I haven't even read the full report yet myself, and so if to the extent that I'm not able to answer some of the questions specifically, that is the primary reason why. We are going to be digging into this report in full very soon. Of course, we've been briefed on it already. But the conclusion here is that we want to partner to get the change that we need. We want a partner in the DOJ to have deep-seated change throughout our department, not just in the way of a policy on paper, but something that the community feels, because that is what true success is going to look like. Success is not relegated to the signature by a judge at the end of a consent decree process, or some confirmation that we have met or have not met compliance standards. Success looks like people on the street in our city feeling safe and even safer when they interact with our police. That is where we want to get. We've done a lot of work. There is a tremendous amount of work and progress that is underway, and we recognize that there is a whole lot of work and progress left to take place. And so we're wholeheartedly in this mission, and we're not going to quit until every person in this city feels safe.
The extent to which the details of these 4 points were laid out, it seems like there's nothing short of dismantling the department and starting from the ground up. Will it go that far, or what does it look like in rebuilding the trust, not only within the ranks, but within the community?
The work is wholesale. This is making sure that we don't just have the policy change written on paper. And by the way, we've authored a ton of policy changes. It's making sure that officers understand what is expected of them through that policy change, that they're trained in on how to respond to that policy change, and then ultimately that they're held accountable if they don't live up to the standards that are met through that policy change. And having that shift of culture and of policy embedded in the department is the part that we're working on the most right now. Again, we've done a ton of policy changes. We need to institute it throughout the department in all of the interactions so that people feel it on the street.
As the nation and the world is watching and digesting today's announcement from the top legal mind, Merrick Garland, it appears to me, Your Honor, that this is not as much as a gut punch to you as it seems it could have been on his face, considering all the work that has gone in to correcting behaviors to this point, i.e. the person who's sitting to your left and Cedric Alexander, and then putting an attorney inside to work alongside the police department.
I think it'd be egotistical to think that this was is all about me. I'm the mayor of the city, and so I have a responsibility here. And so it's on us. It's on me as an executive to make the necessary changes. And look, I embrace that responsibility. I feel the weight of it every single day. This is it's a tough job. And inevitably, no matter what you do, you get hit from all different sides. But it's a job where you can have you can make a whole lot of progress. And that's why I'm optimistic about it. And, you know, I said this at the time that George Floyd was murdered. It's also not just about policing. There are a host of inequities that have been instilled in our city and in our nation over decades and generations. And there's 300 years worth of injustices that we're talking about here. And it's everything from a lack of fair housing, a lack of fair unemployment opportunities. It's redlining, restrictive covenants that run with the land, intentional segregation that has separated out communities from some of their most vital assets. And yes, it's the judicial system and law enforcement also. And so to just look at this through one narrow lens of correction will not see a corrective action in full. And that's why we're tackling this, not just from a policing standpoint, which is critical, but from a housing, from an economic inclusion standpoint, from an environmental justice standpoint as well. That's where a lot of the work happens. Not a day goes by that I don't wish that we did have that sort of magic wand where we could wave it and then suddenly everything changes. I get questions from people oftentimes that says, why don't you do X or Y or Z? And the vast majority of the time, we've tried to do X or Y or Z, and there's either a legal reason that we can't, or there's an extended process that we have to go through in order to make the change that is being advocated for. Following the murder of George Floyd, we were rushing in a good, urgent way to make policy changes. This is doing the other side of that, which is at least as important as the policy change. This is making sure that all of the other parts that institute cultural shift happen along with that change on the paper. And yeah, change does take time. I mentioned this during the press conference. We're not talking about days or months, we're talking about years. And I need to be very upfront with everyone on this right off the bat. If we do everything perfectly, if we execute changes that need to be made perfectly, we're still talking about years. And given that the very human nature of city government, the human nature of police officers themselves, we're not going to do everything perfectly. That's just the reality of the situation that we're in. But I'll tell you, there is a collective desire to change. There is a collective desire, both among those that are already working for the city and those that would come in, both sworn and non, to be the change that we're talking about.
Chief O'Hara, it seems as if these kinds of changes are really going to take significant investment.
Yes.
Yeah, the reason why these things just don't happen unto themselves in cities across the country where these issues are real. This isn't just Minneapolis and the handful of places that are under consent decrees. This is a problem with policing in general. all over the country. So the reason why this stuff doesn't happen is, one, you know, individual incidents may be visible, but all the stuff underneath, the systems, the processes that are lacking that create these opportunities for things to happen, that's not necessarily visible. So that's why, you know, being able to have the Department of Justice to come in and do such a deep dive is so helpful. But to get to some of the root of these issues, but really going forward and trying to fix this stuff, not only does it take years, but it takes millions of dollars. Right. So that's why, you know, we're thankful that we have this, because the city, frankly, we'll have no choice if we want to get and eventually come into compliance with these agreements, is to make the investments that are needed to remedy the situation. You know, I know everybody has been waiting a long time for this day to come. And as difficult as it is, just thankful that we are finally, so that we can begin the process of healing and trying to make progress.
That's right.
Mayor Fry, Chief O'Hara, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And today is National Apple Strudel Day. It's a time to get whirled up in pastry dough, apples, and spices and celebrate National Apple Strudel Day. In Germany, the word strudel means whirlpool or eddy. This tasty dessert is perfectly described in its German language as a sweet mixture of fruit, sugar, spices, and layers of thin dough rolled together and baked. The result is a bubbling, flaky treat. As a dessert item, the strudel goes well with coffee and tea, and consider adding it to a brunch or a bake ahead for guests. Often served at bakeries and coffee shops, strudels can be a savory dish. It's Apple Strudel Day.
Since its release, Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell has inspired tens of thousands. And in these times, words of encouragement can be the difference. How about you? Could daily affirmations and words of encouragement make a difference in your life? Find out with your very own copy of Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell. Available at Amazon, FreddieBell.com, and Barnes & Noble.
Even though the federal COVID public health emergency has ended, it's important to take steps to protect yourself from the virus. The ending of the public health emergency does not change the availability of COVID-19 vaccines. Vaccines will continue to be provided by the federal government through the Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act. It's also anticipated that COVID-19 vaccines will transition to the private market in early fall. You can learn more details about the transitions at the Minnesota Department of Health. Get the most from AARP, including advice and support to help you care for your loved ones. Fraud prevention with tips and tools to help protect you from scams and fraud, including a free helpline if you've been targeted, a scam tracking map, and watchdog alerts via email through the AARP Fraud Watch Network. If you don't know AARP, you don't know ARP.
More information at AARP.org.
RippleConnects.com, connecting you to your better future. Hi, I'm Joe McKenzie, founder of Ripple Connects and trainer of Ripple Effect Networking. Establishing and maintaining a strong professional network is critical to you and your organization's success. My techniques will help you stand out so you can create new sales opportunities, develop and sustain meaningful connections, grow your franchise or small business. If you want to schedule Joe McKenzie to speak to your organization, email me, joe.mckenzie@rippleconnects.com. Your network plus my techniques equals more success for you.
And now, our supporting partner, AARP in the Twin Cities.
Hi, everyone. I'm Freddie Bell, and joining me right now is Kathy McClear, the AARP Minnesota State Director. And I'm just curious, we've been talking for a while. How long now have you been in this post? It seems like you just started the other day, but I think time has gotten by. Is your anniversary coming up?
It is. In September, it will be 2 years, but I've been with AARP for almost 19, so As they say, time flies when you're having fun.
What's the best part of AARP Minnesota for you?
You know, it is the impact that we have on the people of Minnesota. And on previous programs, we've talked about the advocacy work we do and how much that will improve the lives of people 50 plus and their families. And that is such a critical piece of the work that we do. The other critical piece of the work we do is giving back. And that is through our volunteers who just work tirelessly to make their communities better places. And our volunteers just inspire me so much with the work that they do and their passion and their dedication to helping others.
So in that regard, I was asking because you're now accepting nominations for a really prestigious award through AARP.
This is our most prestigious award. So Dr. Ethel Percy Andrus, a retired educator from California, she founded AARP. And my favorite quote from her is, "To serve, not to be served." And so this award, named in her honor, recognizes a Minnesotan 50 and older who is sharing their experience, their talent, or their skills really to enrich the lives of their fellow community members. And so we are now seeking nominations for the 2023 Andrus Award.
Wow, it's an annual awards program. So how can you submit a nomination, and what are the qualities of the individuals that you're looking for?
Yeah, you can find the nomination form at aarp.org/MN. And we are looking for someone who is 50 and older, that their accomplishments or achievements or service that they have done has to be on a volunteer basis. So lots of people do good work and get a paycheck for it, but we're looking for people who just do this out of the goodness of their heart. They do it in their spare time or just do it because they love to do it. Many of these accomplishments, you know, we hope that they reflect AARP's vision and purpose, creating a society in which everyone can age with dignity and live how they choose as they age. And we're a nonpartisan organization, so we don't typically recognize people who are, you know, volunteering in a political way or for a particular political party. You know, these are not staff members of AARP who get recognized, and we've given out these awards for a number of years, and so any past recipients of the Andrus Award are not eligible either. But anybody who's just making a difference for the 50-plus in their community, we want to find out who these folks are and recognize them for their efforts.
So how will they be honored, Kathy?
Sure. Well, we give them a nice little plaque or a statuette, I guess it's probably called. And in addition to that recognition, we give them a $1,500 donation in their name to a nonprofit organization of their choice. And so that's another great way to support their passion and support the work that they're doing in a very tangible way.
All right. A lot of great people have gotten this award. And once again, for those who missed how you can submit a name for nomination, how can we do that?
Sure. You can find the nomination form at aarp.org/MN. And I should also note that the application deadline is July 30th. So just a few short days to keep those nominations coming in so we can get someone recognized for their fantastic work.
She's Kathy McClear, the state director for AARP Minnesota. And this is New Beginnings. Thank you for joining us this week on New Beginnings. From the lighter side of my desk is sad, but it's true. A woman is recovering after waking up inside a coffin at her own funeral. It happened in Ecuador, where mourners were gathered to say goodbye to 76-year-old Bella Montoya, declared dead from a cardiorespiratory arrest. That diagnosis was a bit premature as she started banging inside the coffin. The medics quickly administered aid and later determined that she suffered from catalepsy, a condition that causes a trance-like state, slows bodily functions, and has body rigidity. Her son calls it a miracle from God and says her mother is stable and on oxygen. Wow. A baby boy from New York is going viral for saving a baby deer in his backyard. The young boy's father taped him pulling out the deer after it fell in the pool in St. James on Long Island. As of this week, the video has had over 19 million views on TikTok. The fawn was reunited with his mother shortly afterwards. And those who regularly exercise make more than those who don't. If you're not entirely happy with your life, regular exercise may be the key to your success. A new survey examined the correlation between physical activity levels and lifestyle impacts and found that those who make exercise a regular habit are happier and make more money than those who don't. And a manager who was interviewing a young man for a position in the company wanted to find out something about his personality, so she asked, "If you could have a conversation with someone living or dead, who would it be?" The nervous young man quickly responded, "The living one." Kids in my neighborhood were selling some lemonade the other day, and I asked, "Do you have any ice?" And the oldest kid said, "Nope,
We had ice last time, but this time we're trying to cut cost. If you think having your brain firing on all cylinders for 16 to 18 hours a day is a good thing, researchers say that you're wrong. They say that getting enough sleep and taking regular breaks from working your brain are important. A researcher says that we sleep to clean our brains. On top of getting enough sleep at night, you need to unplug throughout the day because the brain can only focus for 90 to 120 minutes at a time. And here are four things that you probably didn't know. Number one, the largest restaurant in the world can serve 6,000 diners at one time. Number two, the water we drink is 3 billion years old. And number three, it takes 772 peanuts to produce a single 16.3-ounce jar of Skippy peanut butter. And number four, the word hey did not exist prior to the 13th century. On the lighter side this week, I'm Freddie Bell. Get the most from AARP, including advice and support to help you care for your loved ones. Fraud prevention with tips and tools to help protect you from scams and fraud, including a free helpline if you've been targeted, a scam tracking map, and watchdog alerts via email through the AARP Fraud Watch Network. If you don't know AARP, you don't know ARP.
More information at AARP.org.
Even though the federal COVID public health emergency has ended, it's important to take steps to protect yourself from the virus. The ending of the public health emergency does not change the availability of COVID-19 vaccines. Vaccines will continue to be provided by the federal government through the Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act. It's also anticipated that COVID-19 vaccines will transition to the private market in early fall. You can learn more details about the transitions at the Minnesota Department of Health.
Since its release, Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell has inspired tens of thousands. And in these times, words of encouragement can be the difference. How about you? Could daily affirmations and words of encouragement make a difference in your life? Find out with your very own copy of Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell. Available at Amazon, FreddieBell.com, and Barnes & Noble.
RippleConnects.com, connecting you to your better future. Hi, I'm Joe McKenzie, founder of Ripple Connects and trainer of Ripple Effect Networking. Establishing and maintaining a strong professional network is critical to you and your organization's success. My techniques will help you stand out so you can create new sales opportunities, develop and sustain meaningful connections, grow your franchise or small business. If you want to schedule Joe McKenzie to speak to your organization, email me, joe.mckenzie@rippleconnects.com. Your network plus my techniques equals more success for you.
This is a news-oriented broadcast, and all information is educational in nature, is not intended to be legal, securities, tax, or insurance advice. Please consult with the appropriate professional before acting on information heard during the broadcast.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Hi, everyone. I'm Freddie Bell, and now it's time to talk finance with Leibel Sternbach. Leibel is an Amazon best-selling author of Living with Financial Anxiety and Authenticity.
Is real estate a good investment? If you're selling in a high market, aren't you also buying in a high market? I'd like to start the conversation with a question. And it comes from Nathan, who's actually at Financial Planning Magazine, and it's very timely. Here's what he writes. Many people refer to real estate as an investment, but how does that work in practice? The part that puzzles him is the timing. At what moment in the housing market can you make enough of a profit to buy a bigger home? He says, if you sell high, won't you then also be buying high? Label?
So that is a great point, right? Or it really is a great observation. And I think that it really gets to the heart of the matter of, is real estate actually an investment? And for many people, and for a very, very long time in history, real estate was the primary way that people had to grow their wealth, right? If you just think about through history, and when I'm talking about history, we're talking, you know, thousands of years, stock market wasn't an option for most people. You went to the bank, right? And the bank, you know, they stored your wealth, but they didn't really give you money, right? You didn't grow your money. So if you were the average Joe and you had, you know, you were lucky enough to inherit some money or to be really good at your trade craft, you were accumulating wealth, how did you grow that wealth beyond just working more hours? And the answer for most people was, well, you bought land, right? Because land is something that people want, right? And they're generally speaking, as you know, the population grows, as the economy grows, assuming you buy in the right place, more people are always going to want that same piece of land. And so you have something that's constantly in demand. And as demand increases, we know price increases, right? And the by the same token, right, we have currency as, you know, inflation increases, right? Because we naturally want inflation to happen in our economy. That's how our economy grows. That's how our capitalist system works. So as long as there's inflation, there's going to be an increase in value on everything we own, right? Or a decrease and, you know, people pay more. So if I just park my money in a piece of property or in a home or in, you know, some tangible asset like that, that is in demand, I automatically am going to profit from it. And for many people, that was the only way of accumulating their wealth. However, right, when you think of it as an investment, right, and if it's the home that you're living in, well, then you really do have a problem, because if it's a home that you're living in, when you sell it, all the other properties that are in demand are also going to be a higher price, right? So unless you're moving to an area that's in less demand than yours or less cost than yours, you have no way to realize that profit, which is why when it becomes when you look at it as really as an investment vehicle, as you know, and you compare it to all the other options that you have available today, it's not really necessarily the best investment choice, because, you know, can you easily buy and sell it? No, real estate can't easily be bought and sold. Is it expensive to buy and sell it? Yes, you generally have to pay a realtor commissions, right? Does it, you know, do you lose money when you sell it? Yes, usually, absolutely, right? And hopefully the market's gone up, but you got to pay those commissions, you got to pay fees, you got to repair the property, right? You usually can't just sell it as is unless it's a crazy market like we've seen the last few years. And then you've got to buy a replacement, right? You can't just go live on the streets with your newfound wealth. So as an investment, right, it doesn't kind of check all the marks that you want from an investment. From an investment, you want it to be easily sold. You want that when you sell it, you can capture most of the value at the time that you sell it. And you want to know that there's, you know, that it's a good store of value. And so the only thing that real estate really checks off is that it's a good store of value. So when we think about real estate and as an investment, yes, it's something that traditionally was a really great investment vehicle because it was the only option available to most people. But when we think about the realities of if I'm looking for the best way to grow my money, it's not really the best way to grow my money. And the proof of this, if you want to, like, you know, be like, well, label, that sounds good, but lots of people are in real estate. Go look at the gurus who are in real estate. Go look at the big real estate investors. They talk about the fact that they don't own the home that they live in, and that they think it's one of the worst things to do is to own the home you live in. And they'll give you lots of reasons, but the biggest one is that you can't access your wealth in there. You're just locking up your money. It's kind of like putting your money in a mattress and, you know, forgetting about it, right? Like, what good does that do to you?
It's not liquid like some people would think, because, like, think about it. Here we are sitting in mid-June, interest rates hovering near 7%, and I see houses sitting on the market for weeks and months at a time.
Yeah.
So, you, like you just said, you don't have access to your own money, that the biggest investment, so to speak. So why do people still say that real estate is a good investment then? What's going on here? That doesn't make sense with what you were just talking about.
Right. So the reason why people say that real estate is a good investment is because, let's look at the numbers, right? When you have an asset that's always going to be in demand, and right, we know that local markets have different demands and they ebb and flow, but overall, right, we're making babies, and babies need to live somewhere when they get, you know, grow up. Hopefully, they don't stay in the basement for forever. as they grow up and they move out of the house and they need to live somewhere, right, that means that there's a demand for this real estate. And so when we look historically, the average home, the average property has increased in value about 3 to 4% a year, right? So, you know, you're as a pretty stable investment where you're kind of forced to park a good portion of your salary in, right? Because you know, you get a job, you get married, you have kids, you want to live, you know, in a good community, you want to have schools, all that kind of stuff. So you're kind of forced to buy a home, and you don't want to be paying rent that's going to go down the tube. So you buy a house and you start investing money in it. And whether you like it or not, you're, you know, saving a good portion of your money into this house. And it grows 3 to 4% a year. You're forced to save into it. And you have this tangible thing that you can look back on and say, this is mine. Right. You know, and you think that nobody can take it from you, but, you know, you got the tax man, you got, you know, the mortgage company and all those people who are, you know, have their fingers in your pie. But as an investment standpoint, right, it's forced savings at 3 to 4%. And here's another thing that I'm going to plant the seed in your mind. It's going to blow your mind when you think about it. When you think about real estate, right, you think about this really safe, secure investment that you're making. But what if I told you that, in fact, it is the most leveraged, dangerous investment that you ever made, where you can give me a dollar and I'll give you $5 in return, right? Because that's essentially what happens with real estate is you put down, you know, 5, 10, 20%, right? And let's say you're going with the safe traditional putting down 20%. You're putting down 20%. The bank is giving you the other 80% to buy that property. In the investment world, we call that leverage, right? Your $1 is controlling four other dollars. And when you think about it as an investment, right, I'm a very young person, right? You're in your 20s or your 30s and you buy your first house and you put down $10,000, you put down $20,000 or $50,000, and all of a sudden you're controlling a huge amount of money that's growing at 3 to 4% a year because of inflation and because of the demand for homes, right? That is an incredible way to grow your wealth. So from that standpoint, it's great, right? It's something that if you would never do that in your 401k, you're not allowed to do that in. You're not allowed to do that in your retirement accounts. You can't get leverage, you know, 5 to 1 in any of those things. The Federal Reserve doesn't allow it. The most you can get, you know, without becoming a day trader and getting access to that kind of leverage is generally a 2 to 1 ratio. But yeah, when it comes to real estate, we let people do a 5 to 1 ratio, which is insane. But that's it. So that's why people think it's a good investment, because you're given so much leverage. And really, that should be a lesson to you of how investments work, right? The more leverage you have, the more money you make.
You know, I've never thought about it that way. And it leads to me to another question. I've got friends, and I also see a lot of like videos on YouTube and whatnot about all these people about it's investing in real estate. What are your thoughts on this? Are they just tossing their money down the toilet? What's going on here?
So the people who really make money in investing in real estate, and there's two ways to really make money in doing it. Are they throwing away their money? Maybe, maybe not. It really depends. There's a loophole in kind of the investment laws and regulations that allow real estate investors to target everyday people. Whereas if me as, you know, a financial advisor, if I wanted to, you know, sell an investment to, you know, to just anybody, I have to go through compliance, I have to put disclosures, I have to tell people all the risks. And there are things that I can't just sell the everyday investor because it's too risky for someone who's unsophisticated, right?
So you can't just target people? Is that what you're saying?
Say that again.
You can't target people?
Right. I can't go and target people who have no experience in real estate and no understanding of the risks and leverage that they're taking on. And I can't tell them, well, listen, give me your money. I'm going to go buy an apartment building. I'm going to go do whatever. And maybe you're going to get profits, right? I can't just go do that, right? I have to disclose everything to them. Whereas in real estate, we can go after anybody and, you know, they can, there's, the laws are a lot laxer. And there's a lot more ways around those laws where people end up taking on or getting involved in very risky investments. And for every friend that you have who, you know, was successful, you have another friend who wasn't. It doesn't take much to look on the news and see all the people who are getting hammered because they were over leveraged. or they were overexposed to, you know, changing economies and things like that. And it's, you know, so yeah, we understand real estate. It seems like it's a physical asset. It's, you know, something tangible. It's something that we all experience. We all know what a home is. We all have a certain amount of knowledge of what it takes to make a rental property work, or at least we think we do, because we all experience either being a tenant or being a property owner, right? Which is half the battle when it comes to a business, is you need to have knowledge of how the business runs. But we think we have this knowledge of how the business of being a real estate investor works. But in reality, we don't, because we don't know how to turn that into money. And we think, oh, well, the gap must not be that much. There really is a very huge gap, right? And the truth is, you know, putting your money into an S&P 500 index or whatever, right? You're going to make more money than investing in real estate. You just won't have the shot of, you know, that, you know, going to the moon and having that unicorn moment of where, well, I put $50,000 in and I got, you know, $200,000 back. That's not going to happen in the S&P 500, at least not in like, you know, a 3 to 5 year window, not usually. But that could happen in real estate, and everyone kind of gets drawn to that dream. So when it comes to real estate, right, is it a good investment? I mean, for when it comes to as an investment, I wouldn't view it as an investment. I would view it as, you know, this is your home that you're living in. It's a great way to accumulate wealth, assuming you can sell it and that you're going to go then downsize or live in a lower cost area. Otherwise, you have no way to really tap into that wealth that you're accumulating. So, you know, this forced savings plan that's leveraged and has this growth only helps if you have a way to, you know, cash out. And if you don't have a way to cash out, then no, it's a terrible investment idea.
Coming up at the end of our episode today, I've got two quick takeaways. One is, you know, when we were kids and we're about the same age, our parents were, you work hard, you do A, B, C, D, and E, and someday you'll be able to afford a house and have a house and a house and a house and a house. And if I'm understanding right, you're saying that things are changing. People's mindsets are changing. When you do a deep dive into what am I really getting here and how does this work, I can understand why some of the younger folks now are like, you know, I don't know if I want to buy a house.
Yeah, so something, just a takeaway on that. There's a index that you can look at that tracks this. The value of investing in renting versus owning a home, it varies. There are times where it's cheaper to own a home than it is to rent it, and there are other times where renters make out, right? And so it's not necessarily like one or the other. It used to be there was a lot of, you know, the federal government was very behind getting homeowners because it was a study that showed that homeowners make better citizens. And generally speaking, they're more successful. But why they're more successful, right? That's an open-ended question.
And my other takeaway today is it's nice to talk with someone who understands it's realtor. It's not realtor. Doesn't that drive you crazy when you see marketing and they're, I'm a realtor. It's like, no, you're not. You're a realtor. Or the other one's a realtor. It's like, what? I'm not going to work with someone who can't even pronounce their profession. Okay. Well, that's all the time we have today. Join us next week as we're going to be talking about the new fad sweeping the internet. It's called no loss market accounts and compounding interest accounts. Are they a scam? Are they a good investment? That's next time.
All right. He's Label Sternbach. We look forward to hearing from you again next week. Label's website is Yields for You. That's yieldsforyou.com. Yields, the number 4, the letter U.com. I'm Freddie Bell, and more New Beginnings is straight ahead.
Time now for a bit of inspiration. Here's Freddie with this week's Words to the Wise. Words to the Wise.
Focus on what matters most. Today's Words to the Wise focus on what matters most. Today encourages you to prioritize your time and energy toward what aligns with your values and brings fulfillment. Investment in meaningful relationships, personal growth, and positive contributions. Create a purpose-driven life that brings genuine satisfaction. Focus on what matters most, today's Words to the Wise. And if you'd like to learn more, visit me on Instagram at Freddie Bell Radio Shows.
Words to the Wise.
Even though the federal COVID public health emergency has ended, it's important to take steps to protect yourself from the virus. The ending of the public health emergency does not change the availability of COVID-19 vaccines. Vaccines will continue to be provided by the federal government through the Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act. It's also anticipated that COVID-19 vaccines will transition to the private market in early fall. You can learn more details about the transitions at the Minnesota Department of Health. Get the most from AARP, including advice and support to help you care for your loved ones. Fraud prevention with tips and tools to help protect you from scams and fraud, including a free helpline if you've been targeted, a scam tracking map, and watchdog alerts via email through the AARP Fraud Watch Network. If you don't know AARP, you don't know ARP.
More information at AARP.org.
RippleConnects.com, connecting you to your better future. Hi, I'm Joe McKenzie, founder of Ripple Connects and trainer of Ripple Effect Networking. Establishing and maintaining a strong professional network is critical to you and your organization's success. My techniques will help you stand out so you can create new sales opportunities, develop and sustain meaningful connections, grow your franchise or small business. If you want to schedule Joe McKenzie to speak to your organization, email me, joe.mckenzie@rippleconnects.com. Your network plus my techniques equals more success for you.
As New Beginnings continues, we now take you to the spirituality portion of our program, where we introduce the senior minister of Unity South Twin Cities, the Reverend James Stacy. We now join Reverend Stacy with a program already in progress.
Challenging practice. So remember that slip of paper you're going to keep your own notes on. How frequently, in just one day, do you become aware that you are dwelling in the past or in the future and you're not present to the moment, to yourself, to other human beings? That's where your joy is to be found. It reminds me, every year it's a ritual, at least for myself, now for 30 years, I think. I hope it's of some help to those who attend services here for Christmas Eve or around that time. And it is the letter of Brother Giovanni written in 1513. I love it all, but I'm only going to give you two sentences. He wrote to a discouraged friend, "No heaven can come to us unless our hearts find rest in it today. No peace lies in the future, which is not hidden in this present little instant. Take peace. The gloom of the world is but a shadow. Behind it, yet within our reach, is joy." Behind it is joy. But we have to look and be present. One of my favorite unity affirmations from Charles' second wife, Cora Fillmore, regarding the 12 powers. She wrote meditations and affirmations for students who were working with these 12 ideals that Charles outlined. And each one she began with the phrase, "Jesus Christ is now here, lifting me into his consciousness of love, of wisdom, of zeal, of understanding." The point was, she was trying to help Unity students in their meditation get to that now moment. Giovanni's, this little instant moment where the power is, where the joy is, where the healing happens, where the enriching flows, here, now. to shift your imagining power just a moment. Picture that person you just love to be around. It's very likely that person is someone who radiates joy. A person who lifts you up, who makes you smile, brightens a room. They're not necessarily the most outgoing or gregarious, but they're, well, happy in a calm, confident way. That happiness is magnetic. And so our author, Jonathan Reckford, sets his theme of joy. That angel of joy is here now. Now I invite you, continue this exploration. Think of someone you know that radiates this type of joy. Is their joyousness, if that's a proper word, is it carried over from an event last week, a show at the Ordway? Was it something that happened here at Unity South last summer? Perhaps something that they carried over from their childhood. These may be happy memories. It may be fun to recall Beauty and the Beast. But joy is an experience right now. Right in the presence of another. That is the power if you have not taken advantage of praying with one of our prayer chaplains. Do it today. Sharon is in service with the Purple Stole. See what it is like to stand with another human being who's committed themselves, the prayer chaplains just had a training yesterday, committed themselves to being present, practicing what it is to be present to another human being. And they've learned our unity techniques of prayer. It's called listening from the heart. Not hearing what this person is telling you about their mean old boss at work or their neighbor that's always causing them difficulty. No, listening from the heart hears the real soul of that individual. Not the outer details, but what is troubling them? Perhaps fear. Fear of the future, regret over the past. And the prayer chaplain attunes to their presence and affirms the truth of who they are as God's creation. Right with that individual. And there is a power. I've experienced it many times. A real power. This is an opportunity here in our community. Our prayer chaplains are not only available at this service each week, but they join during the week, Monday through Thursday. That means in this past year, they've been in the sanctuary, affirming the truth of all the prayer requests that have been placed in this prayer box. They've done that over 250 times this past year. And over 1,250 times since I agreed to work with them in these daily prayer services. Think about that. They have given their time and their focus on your prayer concerns. Your concerns for family and friends, that you want to hold the highest truth, a vigil of believing in yourself or another that God is with you, that spirit is on your side. That makes me joyous just to think about it.
You just heard a message coming from the Reverend James Stacy, the senior minister of Unity South in the Twin Cities. More information is found at their website at unitysouth.org. It happened this week in 1775. The United States Army was founded on this date. In 1777, the U.S. Congress adopted the Stars and Stripes flag designed by Francis Hopkinson to replace the Grand Union flag. In 1922, Warren G. Harding became the first president heard on radio. In 1942, Anne Frank wrote her first diary entry 2 days after she received it for her birthday. In 1943, the Supreme Court ruled school children could not be forced to salute the American flag if it conflicted with their religious beliefs. In the year 2000, the Southern Baptist Convention declared that women should no longer serve as pastors. And in 2011, then-President Barack Obama met with government officials in San Juan, Puerto Rico. In doing so, he became the first sitting U.S. president to visit the Caribbean island since John F. Kennedy did in 1961. It happened this week, and I'm Freddie Bell. That's our show, and thanks to our special guests for stopping by and sharing information that we hope can change lives. If you missed any of today's show, you can subscribe to our podcast or just Google Freddie Bell or stop by my website of the same name. Thanks for listening, and remember that each day is a chance for a new beginning. See you next week.